I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri land. We pay our respect to their elders past and present, and to the traditional owners of the game Mangrook, without which our game wouldn't exist. This is Footy Actually, brought to you by Play On Radio. Hello and welcome to Footy Actually, the alternative listening footy podcast for diehard fans. My name is Cal Rowe, and I'm here with my co-host, Gemma Bastiani, AFLW analyst extraordinaire. How are you going, Gem?
Hello. We're recording late because I wanted to make sauce.
It's important. Everyone knows sauce is the key to a dish, a la MasterChef.
I'm going to make us take a very quick break in this recording as well so I can go and give it a stir. It's currently simmering.
Priorities.
To make some lasagna, so that's on me.
Please send me a piece when you're done. That would be great.
Provided I don't eat it all.
Okay, we'll see. Well, before we get stuck into round four, I think we need to talk about one thing. I don't really want to talk about the Lions pumping Carlton for a 35-point win, but it would be absolutely remiss of us not to discuss the force that is Zimi Farquharson. What a debut.
Yeah, so the thing about Zimi is that she was picked at number eight in 2020. So she's been on Brisbane's list for a year and sat on the sidelines when they won that premiership. She had a couple of injuries and, you know, there's depth on that Brisbane list. So she couldn't break through.
Yeah, a little bit of a false start. That's okay.
But then she comes out and has a game like she did on Tuesday against Carlton. And her first touch was phenomenal. She gathers it on the wing, takes a bounce, is under a bit of pressure, but still kicks beautifully into Jessie Wardlaw at the top of the goal square. You know, it's just so exciting. And she got the Rising Star nom, which was very deserved. But we couldn't have this pod without mentioning her game on Tuesday, not her debut.
Absolutely. I thought she teamed up really well with Wardlaw. I'm really excited to see some more of that.
The athleticism that both of them have makes their forward line so mobile, which is really scary.
As if they needed any more damaging forwards.
Yeah, and they've got such a nice array of them. That's the thing. You've got a Bodie who has the sidestep and the speed. You've got a Hodder who has the pressure. You've now got Zimi who's got that forethought, that vision into the 50. Wardlaw, obviously, really good in the air, but also at ground level. Dakota Davidson is really strong in the air. Like, they've got everything.
That's obscene.
Yeah, it is.
Well, round four continued with the theme of COVID flexibility. I think we're probably all a little bit naive thinking that it might be one and done or three and done. This time, West Coast was taken out of the contest and St Kilda got a rest this week. Extra games have been pulled forward, but WA, given that indefinite border closures are making it complicated when they return home. So this week we got Thursday night footy and we've also got a Tuesday night game to come.
So Thursday night's game was the Collingwood and Freo game at Vic Park. And coming into this game, Collingwood had won eight games on the trot at Vic Park.
Yeah.
They'd only lost their very first one there against Melbourne back in 2019. So, you know, it's a bit of a fortress for them, but straight off the bat, Freo blew that out of the water. The pressure was overwhelming. They laid 76 tackles, but it wasn't just the tackles that they laid. It was the closing space. It was the double teaming. Like, there was no room to breathe or move for Collingwood. And that resulted in Collingwood getting their fewest inside 50s in their history, which is just 10. And that's actually the second fewest in competition history. So Britt Bonici kicked a goal in the first quarter, for her first goal since her very first goal, with seven behinds in between for Britt. So at least she's broken that streak. But Collingwood just couldn't get the ball forward. And I have questions over how that forward line operates. I think it's been a theme of me talking about Collingwood for the past 2.5 years is I don't think they score enough to be a really damaging team. And that was really exposed. I know this is probably an outlier, but I think it exacerbated some problems they already had. But then you look on the flip side, Anya Tai was moved into defense, played on Sabrina Frederick, had 12 intercepts, which is the second most of any Fremantle player in history.
She was phenomenal.
First game in that position.
Just amazing to watch for someone so tall to have such agility and such ability to gather from the ground as well as taking the air. Like, she just ran rings around Sabrina.
Yeah, and then you've got, you know, obviously Kiara Bowers in the middle was really strong, but Hayley Miller's season has just blown me away.
Absolutely, get out.
Yeah, her breakaway power out of the stoppages. It's not just that she does that multiple times a game. It's that she does it in the dying stages of the game where everyone else is exhausted, but she's still got that power in her legs to get away from the stoppage, move inside 50, and then gather the ball back later in that possession chain. So Fremantle has everything clicking at the moment. They've protected themselves really well from health and safety protocols and stuff like that as well. They've been in a hub. I think it's really impressive what they're doing. They took away Collingwood's game and then piled their own on top of that.
I was on the sideline and all I could think watching it was that Collingwood were trying to execute their standard game plan that might work against nearly every other team in the competition, but Freo were just too fast and too fit and completely outran them in the end. They were constantly first to the ball and the pressure that they put on Collingwood was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
The time away from home for the Dockers only really seems to be fueling their desire to be a finals contender. So who will you play on performer votes for?
So I've given 3 to Hayley Miller. Again, I think she's been phenomenal this year. She had 19 touches, 254 metres gained, 2 goals and 5 tackles. So I just think her consistent performance throughout a game, not just to do those flashy things, she's constantly involved, I think is really impressive. I've given 2 to Kiara Bowers, you know, standard 26 disposal, 7 tackle game for her. She also had 6 inside 50s, 5 clearances and 362 metres gained. So, you know, a very attacking game from her once the ball was won. And that's what I really love about Bowers is we always talk about her tackles and she's a tackling machine. But when the ball is in Freo's possession, she's a very attacking player, which I love. And then 1 to Anya Tai because, again, her 14 disposals went at 71.4% efficiency, which is phenomenal. But then 12 intercepts. The only other Freo player to have more than is Janelle Cuthbertson, who had 17 in round 1 last year. And then she also took 6 marks.
Amazing. Well, I agree with you. I've gone 3 votes for Hayley Miller. She is having an absolute season. I've given 2 votes to Anya Tai. I thought her matchup against Sabs Frederick was amazing. She completely outplayed her that entire game, and it was just really impressive to see. And I've given 1 vote to Britt Bonici because she tried her best to make things happen for the Pies and just kept running and running and running. I think she ran, did she do 488 metres?
Let me have a look. 488 metres gained.
Huge game. So Friday night, we saw the Doggies return to play and face the Giants on their new deck at Henson Park. Despite a valiant crack at the footy after 2 weeks out of the competition, the Dogs fell by 21 points to a remixed Giants side, who, surprisingly, their COVID outs only seemed to revitalise their game. GWS took advantage of the Dogs' early inaccuracies in front of goal and utilised some new avenues to score with defenders Lou Stevenson and Nicola Barr, both getting a run up forward and reaping the rewards. What do you think of that?
Yeah, so going back to my complaint about a team for the past 2.5 years, the Giants have relied on too few to do the job for a long time. They're very rigid. They don't try a lot of different things, really. It's the same players are in the same positions. They don't move the magnets too much. So that's why I think these six outs in the end, actually was a blessing in disguise because it forced them to move these players around. And all of a sudden, they're getting contributions in ways that they haven't in the past. So Parker and Eva to this point of the season, or prior to this game, had been responsible for 50% of GWS's clearances. Last year, it was Parker and Beeson that were responsible for more than 50% of GWS's clearances.
Mm.
Against the Dogs, that was actually lowered to 35%, and 12 different Giants won a clearance. I know Elise Parker still won five, and there was still some dominance from her, but it wasn't like if those two aren't doing it, there's nothing else. Yeah. And then it was meant that they could maybe get on the outside a little bit more, get involved in a different way, which I really liked. And then it was Giants' highest score of 2022 so far, and Staunton only kicked one goal. That's the other thing. They've been so reliant on Cora Staunton to kick their goals. If she doesn't kick them, they're not scoring.
Mm.
All of a sudden, they make these adjustments. Lou Stevenson goes forward, Nicola Barr goes forward, and they are less predictable in that forward line. And all of a sudden, they're piling on a score that we haven't seen from them this year. So I think those forced changes were the best thing to possibly happen to them. What I want to see now is not for them to go back to, you know, Chloe Dalton comes back in, Rebecca Privitelli comes back in, Rebecca Beeson comes back in, and they just rest on those laurels again. Because I think without those players that you know are very, very good, you realize maybe as a player that's second tier to them, that it's on you now. So let's get the job done rather than expecting that they're going to do it. And that's probably the biggest lesson the Giants can learn out of this.
Yeah, you'd have to think that in that situation, it's really imbued some players with some confidence that they might not have had before. And it's shown in the results of the game.
Mm.
I mean, I was hoping for a nice return to play story for the Dogs, but it's just equally good to see the Giants find a bit of form. I think it's good for the competition. Who were your player and performer votes for this week?
So I've given the three to Nicola Barr, which is probably controversial, but she kicked the three goals. She laid three tackles, has had eight disposals. But what I like is her speed around the contest. She backed herself in, and she's got a really beautiful set shot routine as well. So she took opportunities as they came. The first goal was a soccer off the deck near the goal line. She was active around the contest, which GWS don't have a lot of. So I really liked that. And again, it gave them that point of difference in the forward line. So that's why I've given Barr three. And again, probably controversial, I've given two to Emily Pease because she was the one that went into the midfield and did the work to help spread the load. And she's in her second game, third game. Mm. So she had 15 disposals at 73% efficiency, which is super high when you're playing a contested brand of footy. Three tackles, two clearances. She was very consistent throughout the game too, so constant contribution. And then one to Elise Parker, 20 touches, six tackles, five clearances, you know, an Elise Parker game. But again, it wasn't all about her, which is the difference here.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I've given three votes to Nicola Barr. It's always good to see a defender kick goals and to kick three, particularly when you hadn't kicked any up until that point in your, 33-game career?
Yeah, longest wait currently to kick your first goal. I think Sarah Allen has played 43 games without kicking a goal, though. So she's up there, 42 games.
I've given two votes to Elise Parker because, again, she is a workhorse in that midfield, but obviously the team up front need a good service to get those goals. So always important to have that connection. And I've given one point to Ellie Blackburn, who, as per the usual, just tried her guts out to get something happening for her team. I really, really felt for her when she was on to kick a goal and Nell Morris-Dalton came through and got pinged for pushing the Giants player in the back. It's a bit of an unnecessary bump that cost them a goal.
You can tell Ellie's coming back from being sick as well, because I've never seen her sucking in the oxygen like she did on that game. She was hands on her knees at the end of every break. So she didn't stop working. She still worked as hard as she always has, but you can tell that it's affected her.
Absolutely. Hopefully she gets a little bit of rest in the extremely short turnaround for the next game. We'll get to that one later. First up on Saturday, we got a bit of a look at a possible finals matchup between Adelaide and Melbourne, with the Crows continuing their good run of form and claiming a 14-point victory. Much like their outing against Brisbane, they just applied extremely heavy pressure on the Ds from Siren to Siren. And anyone who thinks that Erin Phillips is not still at her peak form is a mug, because she absolutely stamped her authority on the game and booted three goals. The D's lifted in the final term, but it just wasn't enough to reclaim the lead in the end.
Yeah, that pressure is the thing. And we've seen Richmond do it for a couple of quarters. We've seen St Kilda do it for three quarters. We've seen the Western Bulldogs do it for a couple of quarters. That's the way to beat Melbourne. As soon as you apply that pressure, they can't use that clean kicking style. And I probably will get yelled at for this, or people will judge me for having said this, but a lot of disposals for Melbourne on the weekend didn't necessarily mean you're the best player on the ground or best player for the Demons, because the way they used the ball was really poor. Eliza McNamara, she had 22 disposals. Great, but she hit a target maybe 35% of the time. Other times it was just going to a 50-50.
Mm.
Gab Colvin, I think, really struggled in defense on Ash Woodland. Maybe her speed got caught out a little bit. So I think got to look at Melbourne from the perspective of not just how many touches did you get, but what did you actually do with it when you did have that touch? And I think that's maybe where people are getting lost with Melbourne. So like the use of the ball is the backbone of the game style. If you get the ball a lot but turn it over a lot, it's not useful. It's better that you don't get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not efficient.
And again, I'm not attacking individual players on purpose or anything, but it's just the reality of
the pressure,
the way they want to play. Yeah. And then Adelaide just fed into that. They, again, we talk about them being super fit, them and Freo, they're the super fit teams. They can apply pressure from the first siren to the last. And Collingwood was found out this way. Collingwood wanted to use that clean kicking through the corridor style. That's what Melbourne wanted to do. As soon as the pressure's on, they can't use the ball in the way that they want, and the whole thing breaks down. And a really interesting thing here is Melbourne's taken 8 marks inside 50 in round 1, 10 in round 2, 7 in round 3. They took 2 marks inside 50. Both were Daisy Pearce in this game. So that shows you they couldn't get the ball inside 50 the way they wanted. The choices going forward were questionable, and that's because of the pressure that Adelaide was putting on, whether it was perceived or the reality of players bearing down. Adelaide just took away everything that Melbourne wanted to use in that game. I think the margin in this probably flatters Melbourne a little bit.
Yeah, right. Who were your play on performer votes for?
Well, 3 to Phillips. Obviously kicked the 3 goals, 17 touches, 6 tackles. She was really dangerous. She would start in the middle and push forward. So she was dangerous in attack both ways. 2 to Ebony Marinoff, 26 touches, 6 tackles, 5 clearances. Amazing. And this one I had to raffle between Anne Hatchard and Sarah Allen. I've gone with Sarah Allen because I think she set the standard really early. She took 3 marks, so those were contested really early in the game, intercepting marks. She had 7 intercepts for the game, but her positioning was unbelievable in this one.
I've also got Erin Phillips for 3. Like I said, you'd be mad not to. She's clearly still absolutely in prime form, and it's a pretty special thing to watch. I've given 2 votes to Mariana Radjic. Her work on the back line, basically just creating a wall and not, as you say, not letting Melbourne have those inside 50 marks. And I've given 1 vote to Eliza McNamara, because even though she did have a lot of disposals and she might not have used them efficiently.
I didn't see that before.
I still think she did a lot of work for the D's, even if it wasn't coming off for them. Tough game.
I'm sorry, Eliza. I'm not trying to come for you. I just was the first person that came to mind for me. I still love you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So in the second hit out for Saturday, the Lions hosted the Cats at their home deck in Maroochydore, and they claimed a narrow 2-point win. It was a pretty exciting matchup. The Cats are continuing to show growth and improvement, and their backline was pretty resolute. They kept the Lions goalless for the first quarter, which I thought was pretty impressive. The Lions worked their way back into the game thanks to a busy Emily Bates and managed to hold on to the win, despite a dangerous Chloe Shear kicking snags in the back half of the game. The Cats could have snatched it, if not for that last miss.
Yes, well, it's been noted that every time I write about a team, they do well the next time they play. So I'm taking credit. No, I'm joking. Fully joking. But I do recommend going and reading that Geelong article I wrote.
Would you like me to put it in the notes?
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds great. So for me, Aura Dwyer is probably the story for Brisbane so far. She was good last year. She came second in their BNF count in a premiership season. She's great this year. She's taken that step up. She's averaging the most meters gained in the competition with 472.8 per game. That's nearly half a K per game that she's getting the ball forward for Brisbane, which is massive in the context of AFLW.
That's wild.
She's also averaging career best disposals with 18.3, inside 50s with 5 per game, and tackles with 4 per game. So she's doing it on all levels. She's still a little bit scratchy sometimes when she kicks the ball, but if she's getting it forward that much, you don't mind it so much because gaining ground, especially when it got wet in this one, so important. She also kicked a goal in this one. I just really like her attack on the ball. What I didn't like was Geelong thinking that for the first half, they didn't need to have anyone accountable for her. If Anina Morrison was playing, she would have been out on that wing with her and limiting her run. But no one seemed to acknowledge that you can't just let her do what she wants. Especially with the form she's in. So maybe if Sophie Vanderhoeven or someone like that needed to play more accountable to her. But other than that, great game to watch.
I'm just, yeah, like I said before, really impressed with what the Cats are bringing to the competition this year. It's really great to see. Who was your player and performer votes for?
So obviously we give 3 to Emily Bates. She's kicked a goal for the second week in a row. She had 23 touches. She's just so unassuming. I think, you know, you think of really amazing midfielders, you go Ebony Marinoff, you go Madison Prespakis, like there's all those players, and then obviously Georgie Prespakis and Charlie Robron were getting attention this year being recently drafted, but holy cow, Emily Bates just is so reliable every single week, and I just love it. So go Emily Bates.
Ooh.
2 to Aura Dwyer for all the reasons I mentioned earlier, and then 1 to Chloe Shear. She kicked 3 goals. She hasn't had the easiest start to the year at Geelong. She had a head knock in round 1. Round 2, they were just using the ball really poorly and not defending, so she didn't really get a look at the ball, and then she didn't play round 3. Finally, she's out playing out of the goal square. They're getting it deep enough inside 50 for her to have a genuine look at goal, and it was great.
Yeah, really good to see. I agree. I've given 3 votes to Emily Bate. I've given 2 votes to Chloe Shear. Great to see her kicking goals and finally hitting her straps after a bit of a rough start. And I've given 1 to Greta Bodie because I just love.
Oh, she's so good.
Love the attack on goals. Love the bulk. She stepped 3 players in 1 passage of play in the space of, I don't know, maybe like 2 meters. It's just so impressive to see. And yeah, makes for a really, really exciting watching.
Because she's so aware of her surroundings, she's able to slow the game down for herself and make space because she's just constantly aware of what's around her, who they are, so it can be accountable to their skill as well. It's just phenomenal to watch because when she does get the ball, she has a quick glance around and goes.
Yeah, fantastic.
Sorry to just jump in and commandeer your vote discussion.
No, I love the excitement. It's like a game. It's just so fantastic to watch. And then we get to Sunday. So the Sunday Blues were very much a theme of my Sunday afternoon. With Carlton succumbing to a clean and calculating North outfit. The Roos were just too clever. They were constantly finding loose players in space. They were leading out early and they were taking clean possession of the footy. The pressure at stoppages was also amazing. It forced some panic decision making from the Blues, who seemed really unable to string passages of possession together. I think they turned the ball over via intercept 44 times.
Would you like me to, actually, I can't check. I haven't put that into my system yet. Sorry.
Okay. Well, I heard that out of the mouth of half, so I'll take it.
Okay.
It's worth mentioning that I guess Carlton have only had a 5-day turnaround since their game early in the week, and they still have a few key health and safety outs, but that's 2 weeks in a row now that the Roos have absolutely run rings around their opposition.
Carlton, I messaged the Siren group chat during this game, and my whole message was Carlton are frustrating.
Yes.
They just invite the pressure with their ball use. The handball or the kick will just be this high, loopy ball that takes ages to get to the teammate, which if it's done properly, like Darcy Vesio hitting up Nick Stevens, amazing, perfect. But within the context of a pressured midfield where you're trying to get the ball forward, it's just asking North Melbourne to come in, close down that space, either win the ball or even it, and then they lose it at ground level. It's just so frustrating that they couldn't fix that during the game. I know within a pressured game, a short turnaround, all that stuff, footy is a hard game to play. So I acknowledge all of that, but it was just frustrating to watch them constantly miss that handball option. I either missed it completely or put it up and put their teammate under that pressure. So
there was a lot of times when I was there watching it where I thought that instead of waiting for the perfect handball and then getting cleaned up by one of their opposition, they could have actually had more efficient use of the footy if they put it on their boot and searched it forward.
Yeah, and I really liked what a lot of the younger players were doing because they were a lot quicker with that sort of stuff. Keely Sharar, Brooke Vickers, Poppy Schapp, those sorts of players, they weren't waiting. They were either taking it and running and using their speed because they were the quicker players, or they were very cleanly getting that handball out between space. So Poppy Schapp had a handball that actually resulted in one of the goals. So I like them having the youth come through. The reason they've got the youth coming through is because they've had a lot of those outs, but I'd like to see Carlton really kind of dedicate the rest of this season to getting that youth up to scratch, because that's how they fix these problems, I think, rather than, you know, hoping that older players that maybe are getting towards the end of their careers will change, which I don't think is going to happen. Well, I'm being really harsh today. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm right there with you. It seems like a better use and, dare I say, a better way of salvaging this season if they start investing in those players now.
That's a reality of a 10-round season, isn't it? They've won one game in the first 4 weeks. The reality is it's going to be very hard for them to make the top six from here. So I think they've got to start to shift that focus to how do we win it next year? Which I know is probably not what you want to say internally, because you don't want to go into games thinking that you're going to lose, but a 10-round season, that's probably what you've got to do now.
You've got to assess your options for sure.
Yeah.
Who are your player and performer votes for this round?
Yes. So after speaking all about Carlton, Ash Riddell gets my three. 30 disposals, 5 marks. Speaking of that youth and seeing what the future looks like, I think what North is doing is really interesting. They're starting to move some of those more experienced players out of the midfield. They've got Mia King in there, they've got Ash Riddell in there, Jenna Bruton's playing a lot more on the ball, and Emma Carney's at half back, and a few of those movements are happening. I really like that to prepare themselves so they don't get shot in the foot when, you know, and Emma Carney can't play in that midfield anymore. They've got enough there. They've got the experience there. So I really like that.
I'm really liking Carney off the halfback too. That's a great role for her, I think.
Yeah, especially when Carney's strength is that breakthrough run and speed. Coming, like spitting out of the halfback line, it's more powerful than her starting on the ball and having to break away.
Yeah.
Two to Caitlin Ashmore, who I just adore. And I just want to mention that I don't know if I said it at the top before we recorded or in the recording, but I'm going to say it. I'm really glad that people are just constantly talking about wingers this year. And I'm going to take it as because of my article in the ABC last year.
I'm not linking it. I did that last week.
Oh, you did. Sorry. Just constantly talking. It got mentioned so many times today, so I just have to shout that out. Yeah, Caitlin Ashmore had the 11 touches and a goal, but it's what she does without the ball that makes her so dangerous. So shout out to her. And then one to Daria Bannister. She kicked the 2 goals. But what I liked was her pressure in the forward line. And then after not the best start to the game, she worked her way into it. And her work rate was just through the roof in that forward line. So shout out to Daria Bannister.
Yeah, I agree. I've also given 3 votes to Ash Riddell. She's just having a really solid season so far. Such a high work rate in that middle. I've given 2 to Daria Bannister. I really liked, despite the fact that she was not the team that I was supporting, I really liked the 2 snaps from the pockets at each end of the field.
Unbelievable.
So good. Tough angle. Nailed it each time. I believe I read somewhere that pocket down the grandstand end is now called the Jordy Allen pocket.
That was my tweet that Steph Chiocci stole.
Jordan
Allen kicked a goal from there in round one against Carlton. Beautiful kick, and Dario Bannis has just gone and won up there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've given one vote to Georgia G. I just thought that her repeat efforts in the face of some pretty furious pressure were really good, especially when she was playing defensively and trying to regain the ball. 1 point for G for effort.
1 point for effort.
Just a shame it didn't pay off. And then our last game for the weekend was an absolute competition up at Metricon Stadium with the Gold Coast Suns hosting Richmond at home and snagging a 5-point win. This was such an entertaining match to watch. Both sides have shown such a huge improvement this season. They're really stepping it up in the competition. It's so good to see. We were gifted with some classic Perko moments, some huge goals from emerging talent Tara Bahana, and a real team performance from the Suns. And the Tigers gave it back just as much, with Conti overcoming a tag, Brennan bagging a double, and the Richmond backline were just working really hard to clear that ball.
The Suns played really confident footy. They came into this with a win under their belt after over 600 days. They obviously had the week off due to health and safety protocols, but they didn't let it get to them, and they kind of hit it really hard. And then they exploited a Richmond defense that was without Cordner, and then Seymour couldn't play back there because Poppy Kelly's still out of the side. So it was a shorter back line. Rebecca Miller was playing as the sole, you know, tall defender, which meant that one of Perkins or Bahana was always going to be outsizing their opponent. And they exploited that really, really well. And then that's compounded by Kate Sermon's work at their feet. Kate Sermon has gone to another level this year. Her skill with the ball has lifted significantly. So it now matches her effort and speed around the contest. And it's really fun to watch. But the thing about Perkins and Bahana is if one's got the ball, the other one's working hard at the goal line to either create an option or make sure the ball's getting through. We saw it against West Coast, and then we saw it again in this game.
Really clever footy.
Well, they're just mature players.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people talk about Sarah Perkins, like, why is she there? She's not fit. She's not this. She's not that. A, she's fit enough to run around that footy field and apply a ton of pressure and also take some of those marks that she's taking. So she's fit enough to be out there, but also the maturity she brings to the field really comes through. And I think that's really stabilized that forward line. And I'm a big rap on Maddie Levi. You know that. I was really upset when she wasn't playing this year, but at this point I'm like, Maddie Levi who? Tara Bahana is everything to me now.
Can we just take a moment to appreciate that amazing leap that Perkins took into the back of Conti?
Yeah.
Took the mark. And then ran off the mark around Conti.
Yeah, that was better to me.
Into the goal square.
Yeah, her running around Conti was more impressive to me than the mark. Her confidence to run around Conti, a player like Conti, was really impressive. So that shows the level of confidence they're playing with.
I'm pretty sure that a goal resulted off that play, and Conti looked furious.
Oh, yeah, she was yelling at her teammates.
She was in the foreground of the Suns celebration on the broadcast, and she was not happy. Anyway, thoroughly entertaining game. Who are you playing performer votes going to this week?
Three to Alison Drennan. I think she had her best game of the season so far. She had 27 touches, 5 tackles. But the thing that really stood out was when she won the ball in the corridor, she was very direct with her attack, and she always got it on the boot because she wanted to gain that ground. I really liked that because it added to the surge mentality that Gold Coast had. Given the 2 to Kate Sermon, again, she was so good with that surge mentality as well, which is what Gold Coast want to play with. She's also so clean and close. There's just some of the handballs she gets off or some of the steals she makes in the air. She's so quick. And we always mock people when they talk about players having a basketball background, but I think that really helps Sermon with that really clean and close and quick hands thing. She also kicked a goal, had 12 disposals. So go Kate Sermon. And then 1 to Jamie Stanton. Again, I think that's the best game we've seen Jamie Stanton play this year. She played a pretty close role on Conti. I probably wouldn't call it a tag because she wasn't playing purely defensive footy. She was getting off and winning her own ball quite a bit. But what I really like about Stanton is she uses her body really cleverly to win the ball. She's always turning her body to protect the ball. so that she can get it and spin out of trouble. That means she's not caught with it very often, and she's able to break away from the congestion really well. And I think that really came out in this game. Quite often she was winning it in close and then getting out and free from that. And I really liked that. She had 20 touches in this game.
I've given 3 to Tara Bahana because it's just incredible to see what she's been doing the last couple of games. Great to see that form continue. I've given 2 to Ali Drennan. I agree with you. Really great game. And I've given 1 point to Kate Dempsey because I thought her efforts off the Tigers back line were pretty impressive despite going down for the loss. So we had some questions come in this week. Ellie asked us what were our thoughts on who's been a standout or most improved, and Laws similarly asked us who were our most improved players for the season so far. You and I have taken a slightly different approach in answering this. What were your response to that?
I've just chosen 3 players that I think are my big improvers. Maybe I took the easy way out. Kate Sermon, I mentioned earlier, I think her skills have come up to her level of A, enthusiasm, and B, attack at the contest. So it's mm-hmm. made everything she does look so much better because she's able to cap it off with good disposal. Ola O'Dwyer, I've kind of given you all her stats before, but I think she is such an important playmaker for Brisbane. She's so important to their transition into attack, and, you know, looking at their forward line, like we discussed, having that player is so important because you want it into that forward line all the time, and she's the one doing that. And then my 3rd is Hayley Miller, who again, we talked about briefly, but in her 38 games coming to this season between 2017 and 2021, she averaged 12.1 disposals a game and had kicked 4 goals in that time. And she'd never kicked more than 1 goal in a season.
Mm.
This year so far, across the first 4 games, she's averaging 17 disposals and she's kicked 6 goals. And again, I think it's a testament to her fitness, maybe her confidence, because she's been voted in as captain or just chosen as captain. And maybe it's just her maturing as a person as well, but I think she's having an unbelievable season.
Agreed. Agreed. So I answered Ellie's question in a team sense, and I answered Loz in a player sense. It's probably also worth noting that I've just basically come off the back of being at a Carlton game, so there's a fairly blue focus in some of my answers. But in terms of my thoughts on who've been standout and most improved, I'm just loving the general improvement from the Tigers, Suns, and the Cats. The competition is richer for it, to have more competitive sides in those teams. So I've been really impressed with that. And as far as Laws's question, I think mine's a little bit left of field, but I'm actually really really pleased to see the growth and confidence in Daisy Walker for the Blues. She's obviously had to work pretty hard already this season in the back line for the Blues, but I'm really enjoying her attack on the footy and her confidence, especially when she's matching up against some of the more experienced and notable players in the competition. So it's nice to see that growth from her.
Yeah, I think the next step for her is just using the ball a bit better. But she's defensively, she's really good.
Yeah, and obviously, like, great role models to learn from in the back line for Carlton, with Kez and Gab and Moore there. So Luke asked us who our picks are for front runners for the Rising Star so far.
Can you answer this first?
Yeah, I can. I've picked Alyssa Bannon and Charlie Robotten. Mm. I've chosen them because, firstly, I think for their nominations, like, you know, their performances for their nominations were above and beyond. Quite mature, confident players. I know Bannon's in her 2nd year and Robottom's only in her 1st, but I think there's a reason Robottom was picked for number 1. And I feel like moving forward throughout the rest of this season, those two players are only going to shine. Like, consistent performances across the round. So I feel like that puts them in good stead for being front runners for the competition.
So I've chosen one person who has been nominated so far and two that haven't. Mm-hmm. So Rowbottom is the one that who has been nominated. It's really hard to go past her because she's so consistent. Mm-hmm. And she's the exact kind of contested ball player you want in your team. And obviously I adore her and hope the Swans steal her. Two that haven't been nominated yet, but I think will get nominations before the season is out. One's Dana East from Freo. Her hands at the contest are unbelievably good. Those quick hands out, we've talked about in the podcast before, and then her defensive pressure. So people are calling her Baby Turbo, and there's a reason for that. It's because she does it both ways. She defends and then is really good at clearing the ball too. And then the one that's maybe a bit left of field, I really like what Ali Morfitt has been doing at GWS. She's chopping out for Erin McKinnon in the ruck with Jess Allen out. She's just got such a presence on the field. She knows where to position herself. She might not get a lot of the ball, but she's always in the aerial contest and she covers the ground really well. And I've really enjoyed watching her play. I'd love to see how she evolves over the season.
I have to agree with you on that last one, actually, because a couple of those games that I've watched her sub in with McKinnon, I actually think her decision-making has been better than McKinnon.
Mm.
Yeah. So pretty impressive to see for a first-year player. That's great. And finally, speaking of the Giants, Amelia asked us, going from the Giants playing in seemingly random positions and pulling it off, what player do we want to see play in another position they haven't played so far?
I found this really hard to answer.
Yeah.
So I chose someone that I think would be interesting, but I don't think the team needs to do it because they don't need to cover someone in that position.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think I chose my person just because I'm interested to see it, not because I think it would be a good idea.
Okay. Chaos ball. So I think Kathy Spark playing a close defensive role on a forward like Ash Woodland would be really interesting because she's got the speed and the strength to go with someone like that. And then the speed and the willingness to take a bounce and that agility to then run off when she does win the ball. So I think that would be a really fascinating one.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to see that. Please, Lions, do that if you're listening. if you get another matchup, of course. I would love to see Kez Harrington have a run in forward, but only if we can clone her so she's also playing down back. But I'd just be really interested to see how Kez's defensive skills and her ability to use the ball, her ability to take marks would be, I guess, of use to Carlton up front as a target to kick to. She could probably sit at either half forward or full forward, but I think potentially be better suited at half forward with her skill set.
She kicked her first goal in AFLW round one last year.
Mm. Let's see more of that. Defenders kicking goals. What's your game to watch next round?
So obviously I've gone with Brisbane v Collingwood. Mm. Last year, the two sides played twice, once in round seven. And then once in the prelim. And they had a combined margin of 7 points. So first one was 4 points, second one was 3 points. Brisbane won both. So I'm just curious to see how they go up against each other. Brisbane's kind of hitting their straps after a tough start, whereas Collingwood's kind of gone the other way a little bit. They'll obviously bounce back, but it's still going to be tough for them. So, and they have to travel. Collingwood don't travel a lot, and they have to travel up to Queensland for this. So it's going to be an interesting one.
Ooh, okay. Right on. I didn't check where the game was being played, so that does add an element of mystery to it.
Well, as it stands right now, it's being played in Maroochydore. Who knows what's going to happen?
Exactly. That did cross my mind when I was thinking about what game I'd like to see, whether or not I would actually get to see it. It'd be a whole other kettle of fish. I have chosen North Freo. Much for the same reasons I was excited to see Collingwood Freo play last week. Just the two styles of play match up. Obviously, North have had two on the run. Freo have had four on the run. I think it'd be a really entertaining match to watch. I think a lot of pressure and a lot of clean ball use. So it could be, yeah, a really good one. And at this stage, it's being played in Tassie, I believe, in Hobart.
We'll see. Who knows?
Yeah. Chaos footy. We'll never.
Chaos
never
footy.
Know.
That is
the
season.
We won't know until Wednesday, like COB, I reckon.
I have written many a piece about fixture changes this year already.
Too true. On that note, based on the fixture as it stands now, what are your tips for round five? I mean, obviously, we've still got the Doggies v Freo to come on Tuesday. What do you think that?
Yeah, Freo by 35. And I'm probably being conservative with the margin with the way Freo is playing right now.
Yeah, look, I'm going to have to agree with you on that. As much as I'd love the Dogs to get a win under their belt, it's just not really a possibility against Freo, the way they're playing at the moment, and given the recovery from COVID for the Doggies. So, yeah, I'll agree with you and say Freo by 42.
Writing this down diligently.
And then, of course, on Friday, we've got the Cats taking on the Eagles at Cardinia Park.
Now, we want this game to go ahead, everyone, because I'm meant to be calling this one.
Yes.
So please don't let another game I'm meant to be calling get cancelled.
Send vibes out into the universe.
I'm going Geelong by 20. Obviously, Eagles will be coming back from some of that disruption. And I reckon that the Cats are so frustrated that they didn't get that win.
They're so
that
close.
They'll come out just obliterate.
Yeah, I too have picked the Cats. I've got them winning by 24, and I cannot wait to see them get that win, especially if it's at home. That'll be amazing. On Saturday afternoon, we have the Giants taking on St Kilda at Henson Park. Who have you got?
Yeah, going Giants with this one, but I don't feel confident in it. Both teams are coming off a good performance. Saints obviously has had a week in between, but if Giants play the way they did on Friday, they should win this because I think they've got more attack in them. But again, I don't feel confident about this, so I'm tipping them by a goal.
I'm tipping the Saints by 8.
Yeah, you're a Saints supporter though.
Yeah, I know. Then Saturday night, we've got Lions taking on Collingwood, as we just talked about. Who have you got?
Yeah, Brisbane. By 8 points. I think now that Brisbane have hit their straps, they're going to be that hard to beat team again. Whereas Collingwood, again, I have questions about their forward line.
Yeah, I've gone Lions by 12, despite the fact I think that Collingwood will probably be stinging a bit from that loss. I agree. I think the Lions have really found some form and are on a bit of a run. So that's my tip.
What was your margin? Sorry, I didn't write it down.
12.
12, thank you.
2 goals.
I feel like the world needs to know that I'm the one writing this down.
But who does the edit, Jim?
You do all the work, I should say. You do absolutely everything. I jump on here once a week and talk and then piss off.
And then the podcast magically appears.
Magically appears.
But also, thank you for taking down my tips because I don't remember them. And I probably tip differently when I actually put my tips in.
I just want it for victory. Yep.
I think it's pretty safe to say that this far in advance, you'll probably win.
You never know.
My tipping is chaotic. Saturday night, we've got the Doggies taking on Richmond at Witten. Nice Saturday night under lights at Witten. What do you reckon?
So I've just changed my tip, as we've spoken. I'm going Dogs by 2.
I'm going Dogs by 2.
Controversy.
I want them to get up.
Yeah, I've just changed it. Change of heart.
Good, good. Hopefully they get a decent rest in that short turnaround.
That was why I didn't tip them to begin with, but now they've got to get a win.
Yeah, it's time. Then we have on Sunday afternoon, we've got North taking on Freo down at Hobart. Who's your pick?
Freo. I don't think North are as good a team as people think they are right now. I don't think their forward line is mobile enough. I know Emma King and Talia Randall, both great players, great in the air, all that sort of stuff. But I don't think they're mobile enough. And then you add that Kim Rennie is there as well. I think they are a bit slow and they looked quick against Carlton, but I don't think they're quick enough to go with Freo.
That's fair. I mean, they are good in the air, but you need a good balance of talls and smalls to crumb. And I don't know that they can match up against Freo.
I just don't think the balance is, I don't know if the balance is right. Whereas you look at Freo, their forward line, Gemma Houghton is one of their talls, but she's very athletic and mobile. You know, Mim Strom is probably their least mobile player, but she's not sitting forward. And she still does that ground ball pressure stuff. Yeah, that's my question about North that I didn't mention earlier. Sorry.
What's your tip though?
Freo by 15. Sorry.
I've gone Freo by 2. I'm going a closer margin. Probably just scarred from this afternoon. Speaking of scarring, the next game is Carlton hosting Adelaide at Icon Park. I'm a bit scared by this one.
Yeah, I think you should be, to be honest. Yeah. I'm tipping Adelaide by 40.
I'm tipping Adelaide by 35. Sorry,
yeah.
Blues.
Yeah.
I really want them to get a win, but this fixture is not their friend.
Also, the way they play is not their friend.
Also that I was just going to follow up with, but also I don't know if any fixture would be their friend right now. I love you, Blues, but come on. And then, of course, the final game for Sunday. We've got a few on Sunday. D's play Gold Coast Suns at Casey Fields.
Yeah, I think Melbourne's going to bounce back, win by 15. The Suns' pressure is good, but they were exposed a little bit against Richmond at times. And I think Jade Pregelly, she did injure her knee. She didn't play the second half of the game.
They're pretty conservative about that.
Yeah, and I think her missing really exposes them out the back. She usually plays as that deep defender, and Lauren Irons plays more attacking, rebounding out of defense. That's my concern. And then with a forward line like Melbourne's, I think they can take advantage of that a little bit.
Yeah, they can probably exploit it far greater than Richmond would. Agreed, I've gone D's by 18. Well, that is a wrap on our preview of round 4 of the AFLW season 2022. If you'd like to follow along with us this season, be sure to follow us on Twitter. You can find me at @Ro_Kel, and you can also find at @PlayOnRadioMelb. Jem, what's your Twitter handle?
I'm at GL Bastiani. It's spelled how it sounds.
It is, actually. That's really handy.
Yes.
Well, that's it from us for now. Thanks for listening, and we'll chat to you next time on Footy Actually.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.